Meditation can reintroduce you to the part that's been missing. And that is the thought for today. Welcome to 7 Good Minutes. I'm Clyde Lee Dennis. Thanks for joining me for what I believe will be 7 of the most enriching minutes of your day. In today's episode of 7 Good Minutes, we get a great explanation as to why meditating is such an effective habit. Enjoy.
Meditation has been shown to be a great way to lower activity in the default mode network and turn down the inner chatter that comes with it. Yale psychiatric professor Judson Brewer and his colleagues studied practitioners of several different meditation styles and found that their brain's default mode network shows less activity. This was true, of course, during meditation, but there was less activity even when they weren't doing anything. With meditation, they actually changed their brain's standard mode of operation to be less distracted. This seems reason enough to meditate, but meditation has an almost laughably long list of health benefits. It lowers your levels of stress hormones, lowers your blood pressure, boosts your immune system, mitigates depression, anxiety, ADHD, and age-related cognitive decline. It can even help with things like psoriasis and irritable bowel syndrome. After a while, it starts to sound like one of those "doctors hate him" advertisements that you see on the side of a webpage. But there are hundreds of studies documenting these kinds of benefits. Tim Ferriss says more than 80% of the world-class performers I've interviewed have some form of daily meditation or mindfulness practice. He also says that it is a meta skill that improves everything else. There are various types of meditation, but they mostly have one thing in common. They are improving your abilities of awareness and attention. William James said in his 1890 classic, The Principles of Psychology, that the faculty of voluntarily bringing back a wandering attention over and over again is the very root of judgment, character, and will. An education which should improve this faculty would be the education par excellence. This skill of attention is even more important nowadays. Our awareness is constantly being redirected by advertisements, emails, and especially by a magical rectangle in our pockets. And it seems that the more we unconsciously let our attention be directed and redirected, the less aware we become of the fact that it is happening. As Yuval Harari says in his book Homo Deus, in ancient times, having power meant having access to data. Today, having power means knowing what to ignore. In general, most forms of meditation are helping you to develop something called mindfulness. As Jon Kabat-Zinn, creator of the Center for Mindfulness in Medicine, says, mindfulness is paying attention in a particular way, on purpose, in the present moment, and non-judgmentally. For example, a common method of meditation is to sit upright in a comfortable position and focus on the feeling of your breath. Then, when you notice that your mind has wandered, bring your attention back to the breath. Paying attention non-judgmentally means to pay attention only to the raw sensory data of the breath. Naturally, your inner narrator will have you think about things like whether you're breathing too fast, how much time has passed, and before you know it, you'll be thinking of the way Darth Vader breathes, James Earl Jones, and The Lion King. At this point, you should redirect your attention back to the breath. It can be annoying to notice that you are unsuccessful in maintaining your focus, but this is the whole point. This redirecting of attention is like a bicep curl for the brain. As Dan Harris, author of 10% Happier, puts it, you are breaking a lifetime habit of walking around in a
fog, in a daydream of projection into the future and rumination about the past, and you are actually focusing on what's happening right now.
Not only this, meditation allows you to sit in the experiences of life without letting them control you. A straightforward example of this is pain. In this presentation, Kelly McGonigal is discussing a study led by Joseph Grant at the University of Montreal, where they took experienced Zen meditators and non-meditators and inflicted them with the same type of pain, thermal heat, delivered via this thing strapped to their calf. What the study found was that experienced meditators needed higher levels of heat in order to achieve the same level of pain. What these brain scans are showing is the difference between meditators and non-meditators while they are asked to attend normally to the pain. They aren't meditating. This is their brain's standard mode of operation. Non-meditators showed more activation in evaluative regions, regions associated with the default mode network and inner chatter. Meditators, however, showed more activation in sensory pain processing regions. There is more activity in areas of the brain that listen to pain, like the insula and the thalamus. And the networks associated with paying attention to the pain and making commentary about the pain were functionally decoupled. What this means is that these regions were not firing together as they normally do. So the meditators can feel the pain with more clarity, but derive less suffering from it because they are attending to the pain non-judgmentally. They can examine the raw sensory data of the pain without coupling it to a dialogue about the pain. Sam Harris, author of the book Waking Up, logically breaks this down in an interview with Joe Rogan. He gives the example of having a massive soreness in your shoulder from one of two situations. One, you're very sore because you hit a new personal best on deadlift. Or the soreness might be the result of cancer, and you're waiting for the biopsy results to confirm this. So the sensation could be pleasant or unpleasant depending on the conceptual frame. The pain could be coupled with pride or intense anxiety. Being able to decouple sensation from your evaluating inner dialogue would be an incredibly useful skill. Viktor Frankl, the Austrian Holocaust survivor and neurologist, said that between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. One thing meditation does is it helps you to be comfortable sitting in this space.
Please keep in mind, this is about half of the entire presentation. If you're up for a treat, you should definitely listen to the whole thing. You can do so by clicking the link labeled View the Full Video on YouTube in the show notes. So that does it for this episode of 7 Good Minutes. Until next time, let's be civil to one another out there. Thanks for listening.